A few days ago, Radio Prague and the Czech Literature Portal, the country's foremost website promoting Czech literature abroad, got together to hold the first of a series of public literary discussions. David Vaughan's guests were two of the Czech Republic's best-known literary figures, the novelist Petra Hulová and the critic and translator Martin Machovec. They were joined by an international audience at one of Prague's most atmospheric literary dens, the Shakespeare and Sons bookshop tucked away in one of the ancient houses on Prague's Kampa Island. The subject was politics and literature. 20 years after the fall of communism, are the two in any way compatible here in the Czech context? For the rest of the program, we go to Shakespeare and Sons for an edited version of that discussion. Here's David Vaughan.
Hello, and I'd like to welcome our audience here in the Shakespeare and Sons bookshop, just off the Charles Bridge in the heart of Prague, and also Radio Prague's listeners around the world. We're here for a short discussion on a very difficult but perennial topic, the question of politics and writing, politics and literature. Politics is probably something that most Czechs feel that they've had more than enough of in the course of the last century. Again and again, the Czech nation have been the victims of various types of engineering of human souls. 20 years after the fall of communism, the question is there any sense at all talking about literature in a political context? And if so, how do politics and writing interact? To talk about the subject, I'm joined by the academic and translator Martin Machovec, who has written extensively about the underground in Czechoslovakia under communism. And I'm also joined by Petra Hulová, who was, I believe, only or exactly 10 years old when the communist regime fell, and has since become one of the most acclaimed, most widely read and widely translated Czech novelists. Petra's latest novel, which was published earlier this year, Guardians of the Common Good, deals very directly with the legacy of the communist regime. And it's written from the point of view of one of, I suppose you could say, the losers in the changes since the fall of communism. Thank you both very much indeed for joining me in Shakespeare and Sons, and thank you very much as well to our audience. Petra, I'd like to start with you and with your book, Guardians of the Common Good, because when we're talking about politics, one of the interesting things about the narrator of that story is that she is completely politically incorrect in today's terms. She's very nostalgic about the old regime. She talks about the changes since the fall of communism as a counter-revolution. What inspired you to write from that point of view?
I think in most of my books I'm looking for some kind of provocative voice. For example, in my fourth book, it was a story told by a prostitute, so it was provocative in a sexual sort of way, and this time it was provocative politically. So why did I choose this woman to tell the story? I think it would be interesting view that somehow is missing here, that we don't hear very often. There are many books about the time before the fall of communism. They are almost always told by people who were like trying to fight the regime, were in opposition. And I wanted to tell a different story and provoke some kind of debate, maybe. So that's why I chose this communist fanatic.
I have the impression that you quite like her as well.
Well, I always have to love my characters when I write in their voices. So, of course, I like her, although it's not me. That's the only way how I can be persuasive.
Maybe we can turn to Martin Machovec and to sort of go right back to the early days of the communist regime, when there was a very sincere and widespread support among writers for the new regime. There's, for example, if I just quote from one poem from the early 1950s, from the days after Joseph Stalin had died, "The battle's not over, the battle is just beginning. Stalin has died, but Stalin's work and Stalin's children live on. And this is written by none other than one of the foremost later dissidents and émigrés, Pavel Kohout. So even writers like that in those early days were enthusiastic about the communist regime, weren't they?
Well, they certainly were. I mean, in the 50s, well, the official guidelines were that the representatives of the working class, well, those the vanguard writers, were to write something about, well, political matters as well, to fight for the cause of the working class, of the humanity, etc. So don't let the fact surprise us that, well, Pavel Kohout was in the early 50s were really a convinced communist. He must have trusted it. Václav Havel, several times on several occasions during the 70s and the 80s, claimed that actually there's no political life, because what officially existed, there was no real political exchange, because there was a monopoly of power of one ruling party. So, of course, there were no real politics in terms of, let's say, Western civilizations or Western democracy. And through this, he claimed that everything is becoming political. Whatever you do, whatever individual, independent act you do, it turns out to be political, because it's potentially dangerous. It jeopardizes the monopoly of power. And there was this abrupt change, I would say, that happened in 1989, when suddenly, well, literature could be only restricted to its original aims.
Petra, in several of your books, you've written about generational conflicts in families. You're the same generation as the narrator of your book, Guardians of the Common Good. The world that you grew up in is a similar world to hers, the world of normalization, as it was called here. Your daughter's going to be growing up in a very different world, isn't she?
Yeah, that's right.
More boring, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, before the fall of the communist regime, it was somehow easier to find yourself a particular position or voice you want to speak out, because the distinction between evil and good was easier than now, and the reality those days was less boring than now somehow.
And yet the legacy of that time, as you show in this book, is felt very strongly, isn't it, today? I mean, there's still much of the legacy of the period of normalization, even in people of your generation who were actually still children when the communist regime fell.
I was 10 years old when the Velvet Revolution happened, and I remember mostly aesthetics, I think, how things and city and shops looked like, and I can remember atmosphere at school and some emotions I felt when there were, it's like, you know, official ceremonies at school and stuff like that.
In the book you write about, for example, the May Day parades, and how enthusiastic everybody was for them, and it was a kind of fun, and it was a day off school, and
yeah, yeah.
And everybody put on their red scarves, their pioneer scarves, and there was an atmosphere of celebration. I mean, is that what you remember as well?
I do remember a little bit. Of course, this is a book of fiction, so most of it I just made up.
Well, I mean, I wonder if I can say that I feel a bit nostalgic about, I don't think so, I think I can say I would feel nostalgic about, let's say, May Day parades, but I think what this does correspond with what Petra has just said. Well, there's still heritage of the past, of the, let's say, the four totalitarian decades of the relatively long time when, let's say, three generations were formed and were just, well, they carry on the burden of the past. They can't get rid of it, that's for sure. Even their children, because they're influenced by their parents. And so that's what gives good causes to making up heroes such as, well, Petra has just made up, you know, is a person who can't be interpreted as in negative terms necessarily, also in positive terms. And that's at last something that for me is an evidence of getting rid of this black and white division. Any experience can enrich you. So if you happen to spend some years in a labor camp, in as much you can then somehow use them, and you can just, well, just use them in positive terms. So I quite agree with Petra.
Well, funny thing is that for me personally, it was not evil at all. I mean, all I remember from those days are just positive experiences. I had a happy childhood in a happy family, and I was very positive about the world I lived in.
So could we take the first question maybe from somebody in the audience?
Stephen Weeks. What you were saying earlier about having a childhood reality in those times, I mean, of course, there is film footage of children playing in Terezin concentration camp and still photographs of children playing in Auschwitz because that was their reality and children will always play. What I used to feel sorry for when I first started to come here in the 1994 onwards was seeing older people who were just coming up for or just had reached retirement. So it must have been really terrible for them because they were being told that all their life, all their active life, you know, from childhood onwards was for nothing, that what they had worked for, striven for, what they had enjoyed or suffered was actually nothing. So it seemed a terrible thing for them, and I can understand that bitterness, which is still inherent in this country, and that's one of the problems. And then, of course, that bitterness is passed on to other generations as envy and distrust and so on.
Only just a few words. I mean, I quite agree what you have just said. I mean, just this is, there is this ambiguity of experience, what I've been talking about before, that it is, I think, quite difficult for people coming to, well, this country or any other country that went through similar experience to understand the local people's experience. So how come that you liked your childhood if you just, well, you lived in under communists, you know, you must have suffered only. In Russian literature, you can find a lot of similar examples that even there in the real hell, just, well, try to establish conditions that enable you to survive. And then you can even, with some nostalgia, remember those days. Because they were your days. You were young, and you were active at that time. So that's it. I would say, thanks to fiction, thanks to poetry, that we can be helped to understand our own past, or the past of, let's say, nations that went through similar, let's say, disasters or whatever, and are going to, because, of course, this is not going to end.
You said you empathized with the older people who spent most of their life in the communist era and suddenly were told, like, your life was for nothing and so on. Well, I wouldn't be so empathetic with them because I think that at least after 1968 and even before, anybody who was sincere and wanted to know and was not scared or lazy to think had to understand that the regime was not good and that the reality how was described by the political elite was
a lie,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Looking to the present day with the current elections going on, I was looking at some of the slogans that you see, which strike me as every bit as absurd as some of the things that were being said in the communist days. My favourite, I think, was the fourth best zoo in Europe, which I'm never quite sure whether it's referring to the country or to the fact that it's got a good zoo. And there was another slogan, wonderfully ambiguous, that said, "That's not the way to do it." So that was a fascinating
one.
And also, exactly, and also there was a slogan, "If trees could vote, they'd vote for us." I sometimes can't help wondering whether maybe there's much less rebelliousness in today's society than there was in the writing, let's say, of the literature, the underground literature before the fall of communism, whether today, isn't it about time that we had another wave of rebelliousness against all this nonsense?
I think, well, just that's something that will come. I would be ready. I think that few writers are ready to involve political themes and topics in their writings, in their fiction. And I think that this is a kind of a very, very substantial, essential change that was so far, well, even earlier, well, we could go even deeper into our history, this has always been present. And suddenly, of course, the situation is different, and the energy that was present, let's say, in the underground writings of the 70s and 80s, of the 50s as well, now could find the expression in a bit different way. No, I'm afraid that through it, it loses some of its shape, or how should I say it?
Isn't politics so potentially fatal? So you end up with slogans like some of the ones on the billboards, or the nonsense that writers like Pavel Kohout were writing in the 1950s in honour of Stalin. It's a dangerous path, isn't it, Petra, to be too political or to be too overtly political?
Well, Actually, I'm glad that Martin said what he said. I somehow didn't expect it. There was a conference about engagement of contemporary Czech artists into like politics and civic area, and I read that most of the visual artists, they were much more like pro-political engagement, and writers were much more hesitant towards it, saying stuff like any text is always an engagement and meaningless sentences like that. I think that it's important and it's valuable somehow to resemble in your writings what's going on around you right now. It does not mean necessarily politics, like what politicians say, but somehow be aware of the world you live in and deal with it somehow. Because I think many writers tend to enclose themselves in a world of these timeless topics as love and hatred and kids and death and relationships. It's really difficult, but I think it's something important, and it's quite rare in contemporary Czech literature.
But in a way, you can be quite subversive or even political in writing about very internal, personal things, can't you? I mean, in your own short novel, The Artificial Triple Room, I think it would be called in English, it deals with the life of an aging prostitute, doesn't it, from her own perspective, and it's very overt sexually. This, in a sense, is a form of politics as well, isn't it?
I definitely agree. This monologue of a prostitute who dealt with sexual topics in her speech was somehow a covered message about the world we live in, let's say. And also this last book of mine, which is a story told by a communist, is a partly science fiction. There are like completely fantastic parts. It's just the way how I dealt with the genre, because I didn't want to sound like a newspaper but wanted to refer to something we live.
Any comments or questions from the audience?
In the West, usually the people who call themselves dissidents would have to be on the left, because if they were not, the regime would not be a problem. Usually when the regime became a problem, then you would become a dissident and you would somehow not usually fight it, but you would, you know, write against it, you would try to find problems with it. I was wondering, how would you compare those people in Western Europe with the dissidents that we know from Czechoslovakia in 1970s, 1980s?
We have left-oriented intellectuals here as well now, and I would say they are dissidents in a way that their voice is somewhere on the margin, and that because of our communist experience, we usually tend to label anybody with a leftish worldview as a communist, and we tend to be full of prejudices towards these people. So there is something in common in a way that both of these groups are on the margin.
Let me remind you of one thing. There's still this misunderstanding is going on, interpreting of the Soviet bloc countries as if they were a real communist country. There are no leftists. This is something that we should make clear at the beginning of any discussion. You know, on the contrary, well, first of all, I would say that the terms of what's left, what's right, is being so much misused that they've lost their original contents. So that's one thing. And B, those Central Eastern European dissidents who claim to be anti-communists, meaning anti-Soviet regime, anti-totalitarian, anti-Kremlin-like politicians, they were sort of manipulated into the position in which they were just sort of identified, let's say, okay, well, you are anti-communists, Well, in the long run, you are right-wing thinkers or something like that. On the contrary, there's a rich variety within the dissidents. For instance, there were also figures such as Egon Bondi, who claimed to be Maoist and Marxist. Of course, he was a rare bird here. Let's face it, or Petr Uhl was a better known, maybe. Well, so there were some who just, well, never let the public opinion to manipulate them into, let's say, so, okay, the black and white, I'm against you, so that means that I have to be a sort of right-wing politician or a right-wing thinker. But then, in late 1968, those ones who were pro-Kremlin communists were nicknamed konzervy in Czech, meaning conservative politicians. What did they want to keep on? As well, of course, their own positions. So they were considered to be conservatives.
Do we have any more questions or any more comments?
I will have one question to Petra Hulová, because you know writings of your colleagues, your Czech writers. So if you see in the works some marks of some new politics, revolt of what is happening now?
Let's define political writing as something that deals with the situation of Czech Republic right now in general, not definitely tied with politics. As for poetry, I would name Jan Těsnohlídek as somebody who really speaks of these things in his poems and is, let's say, some kind of a voice of his generation, which deals with this like nothingness in terms of ideology and this difficulty to find a stand where you can judge from. And I would name definitely also David Zábranský, especially his first novel Slabost pro každou jinou pláž, though he is very controversial. It's very much language and thoughts oriented, but he wants to bear the message about what he sees around, and I do respect it, and I think it's intelligent writing. So I would also mention probably Petra Soukupová, whom I respect very much as well, but it's not very much political, it's more relationships oriented.
Just, I'm quite happy that Petra mentioned those writers she did, because I would say that, well, this is something that would enable us to establish, let's say, two different approaches towards political matters within the Czech contemporary scene. Those ones who somehow try to involve, let's say, social issues, burning issues that really need to be expressed through the language of fiction. And through these, of course, they somehow mirror even the world of politics. Those ones could be just found as one group, whereas others, there are still some other writers, and if I may, I'd like to mention those ones who are, let's say, burdened by the legacy, by the heritage of the old underground writers, who still go on writing and feel it necessary to express their direct political attitudes. The trouble is that these writers are not much published, and their criticism doesn't touch the ear of general reading public, to say nothing about the politicians.
Thank you very much indeed, Martin Machovec and Petra Hulová, for coming to talk here in the Shakespeare and Sons bookshop here in the centre of Prague. And thank you very much as well to our audience. Goodbye. Thank you.